talk I'll give today will be on keeping the mind bright. Talked about a little bit about this last week in terms of our reflection on teachers and how our teachers, if it's our Dharma teachers or other teachers we've had in life, are beings who we should cultivate our gratitude for, and when we do, it brings us joy. But we often talk about keeping the mind bright. Whenever I give instructions for meditation, I invariably include the instructions for keeping the mind bright during the meditation. Developing brightness of mind, this quality of mind and heart, which includes gratitude and the heart quality of appreciation or appreciative joy. So cultivating this quality of appreciative joy, this quality of brightness, is a critical element in Dharma practice. And the reason why we talk about it so often is it's so important. It's just an absolutely integral element of the path that the Buddha taught, integral to the path that the Buddha taught, the cultivation of appreciation, appreciative joy, this effort that we make to brighten the mind is integral to the path. So we practice, as I've said, with this aspect of cultivation. Path is a path of abandoning and cultivating. In cultivating appreciative joy, we're attending to the elements of the practice in which we're cultivating good qualities, cultivating goodness. In meditation, we make an effort to keep the mind bright. We often talk about at the beginning of our meditation, reflecting on our goodness and the goodness around us in the world in the service of keeping the mind bright. Something that I, as I've often mentioned, have a commitment to myself to do every time I meditate, to take a few moments at the beginning of every meditation to remember my blessings. We talk about these four categories of blessings: the blessing of our own goodness, which includes our generosity, our effort that we make to develop virtue, to follow the five precepts, and to practice non-harming, and to be skillful in our lives, in terms of our acts and our speech and our thoughts. And then the third element of our goodness to the effort that we make in training the mind and opening the heart. All the things that we do in the service of having a more open heart and living and acting in that excuse me, in that way, the effort is where we, excuse me, where we find our goodness. Often say, you know, just coming to the class is an expression of our goodness, and I often say that because it's true. It's very important. So these four categories of blessings include our own goodness, the goodness of others, which is what I talked about last week in terms of teachers, the goodness of beings who support us on our path, who've shown us kindness, who've gone out of the way to help us through their generosity. So we can reflect on the blessing of these beings. And then the third category, the blessing of the Dhamma, which includes the teachings, the path, but also that quality of Dhamma or truth that we find inside of ourselves in the heart. And then the fourth category, the preciousness of life. So we make an effort in our meditation to keep the mind bright. And we very specifically do that in the application of our skill by reflecting on our blessings, often before the meditation, maybe at the end of the meditation as well. So it's very important to do this in meditation. It's also very important to do this during the course of our days. And that's really what I want to focus on more, is, you know, what we're doing in the meditation is something that we want to do in the course of our days, in the so-called natural meditation posture. Somebody once said to me, well, natural meditation is not very natural. It's probably a little bit of a misnomer in that the title, in that it really just means in your natural settings. That's where the title from it came. But if we want to offer an analysis of natural meditation being not natural, it's so true, because, you know, we don't naturally keep the mind on the breath, and we don't naturally, most of us, keep the mind bright during the course of the day, right? For most of us, that's not our tendency, to keep the mind bright during the course of the day, to actively recollect our goodness and the goodness in the world, and recollect our blessings as we go through the courses of our day. So some of us do this more than others, but in our practice, it's something that it's part of our mental training. You know, it's part of our mental training to keep the mind bright, to train ourselves. It's a skill, so that we can keep the mind bright, that we develop so that we can keep the mind bright as we go through our days and our postures. And there's certain things, of course, that the teachings, and everybody has ways of keeping the mind bright. There's certain things that you do that keep the mind bright. You know, we become more sensitive to what that is as we go through the process. So at first we may think, well, doing that thing keeps the mind bright, and you realize, well, it really doesn't. So, it's a process of learning what activities that you can engage in during the course of your days that keep the mind bright. A lot of the things that you might think are things that would conduce to brightness in the mind are actually more things that conduce to desire or some kind of an emotional state. So this is part of our process, because everybody has certain things, you know. I mean, one of the things, you know, oftentimes for people who are artists, I really try to encourage them to do their art. You know, a lot of people, you know, let go of their art, but their art may keep the mind bright. You know, art keeps our minds bright, you know, or maybe, you know, going to see art. You know, this is where we keep art. You notice behind me a painting that actually somebody in our group did many years ago and gave that painting to me. And I keep it there because it keeps my mind bright. And I've always had it in nearby because it keeps the mind bright. So, you know, we have to learn what keeps our mind bright. The Buddha talks about certain things that we can do during the course of the day. Actually wasn't going to mention that painting, and I realized, oh, perfect, it's right there. I didn't, like, put it up before the talk, so I was like, just kind of happened that way. The Buddha, of course, talks about certain things that we can do to keep the mind bright. He said the easiest way to keep the mind bright as we go through the course of our days is to be in nature. So nature brightens the mind. So that's the easiest thing that you can do. So sometimes for me, just to go to the park or go for a walk, you know, in nature is a way of keeping the mind bright. I try to do that every day if I can. And then, of course, he says association with admirable friends keeps the mind bright. So coming to a class like this keeps the mind bright. Again, that's another one where you have to kind of, you know, like, who can I hang out with that I'm going to feel gratitude for in hanging out with them, and that's going to conduce to brightness in the mind, because we may have certain beings that we think, oh, that person's really funny, you know, that's going to brighten my mind. And then you start to hang out with them, and, you know, all their jokes are about making fun of other people and this, that, and the other thing. Or, You know, we may think, well, hanging out with a certain person is going to keep my mind right, and then you hang out with them and they're really a downer, you know? So, you know, we have to kind of learn, you know, this is why it's so important to choose wisely who we spend our time with. And then, of course, the Buddha says that hearing the Dhamma keeps the mind bright. So again, coming to a class like this, listening to the Dhamma, reading, whatever we can do, surrounding ourselves with the Dhamma is going to keep the mind bright. I mean, I could go through many things, you know, and this is, you know, again, part of our exploration. You know, there's many things that you can do to keep the mind bright during the course of your day. One thing, of course, that's paramount that we can do, you know, and some days we're able to do it more than other days, is to practice generosity. Remember years and years ago, decades ago, you know, I mean, it still holds true to this day. You know, when I was getting sober, you know, and you know, you go through a lot of depression and despair in the early months of getting sober. Not just the early months, the early years, decades. And one of the wise suggestions, you know, if you were struggling, people would say, you know, go make coffee at a meeting. Go talk to another alcoholic. Talk to a newcomer. You know, go put out the chairs before the meeting. Do some kind of service. Practice generosity as a way of bringing brightness to the mind. It was very profound teaching. Very profound teaching, because you know, most of these things that we're doing in terms of cultivating our goodness is very counterintuitive to us. It's like, I don't want to make coffee. You don't realize, you know, I was in the publishing business, you know, I'm going to make coffee, you know, for a bunch of drunks, you know, it's just like, that's going to make my mind bright? No, it's just going to get my hands dirty and filled with coffee grinds. And besides that, I don't know how to make coffee, a big pot of coffee, you know. But, you know, these things, you know, then you do these things, and you know, the mind is bright. I feel good about myself. Part of this process of keeping the mind bright, as Tanisaro Bhikkhu says, is we develop a healthy ego. You know, it conduces to healthy ego development. So practicing generosity in very simple ways is a way of brightening the mind. I mean, I always say, you know, this is on a much more dramatic scale. When I was taking care of my mother in her last years, as many of you remember that period of time, you know, it was a time when it was very difficult, but my mind was generally very bright because I was helping her, and I learned so much, you know. And then I realized, all right, I don't have the energy, but whatever, I'm going to ask my sister to help out. So, you know, generosity is only going to bring brightness to the mind when it's generosity. If you're doing it begrudgingly or unskillfully, it's not going to bring brightness to the mind. But for the most part, I had enough skill when my mother was sick and dying, that I was able to practice generosity with her in a skillful way, and it was joyful. And then after she died, you know, I remember saying to my sister and some other people, it's like, you know, I mean, among the many things that I miss the opportunity to do generosity and to brighten the mind. You know, I had complained about it for 10 years. Now that she was gone, it was like, this was such an incredible opportunity to brighten the mind, you know. Now what am I going to do? Now what am I going to do to brighten the mind? So, and then of course, as we go through our days, we can reflect just the way that we do in the meditation. You know, thinking about that Buddhist term that I always loved. You know, when there's an opening, as we go through the course of our days, we can reflect. And we can reflect, you know, just pausing during the course of the day and reflecting on our own goodness and the goodness around us. I like every day just, you know, at different points just to reflect on just the blessing of the day, the blessing of the 24 hours. You know, just to pause and reflect on how fortunate I am to be in this human life on this day. So the real emphasis in this teaching today for me is in offering it is to speak to the necessity for being proactive. To speak to the necessity for being proactive in keeping the mind bright. Making an effort to keep the mind bright. It's not just going to happen, you know? It's not just going to happen on its own. You have to make an effort to keep the mind bright. And this is one of the most important areas of effort in our practice, the effort that we make to keep the mind bright. So, you know, it's like all effort that we make, you know, there's effort and determination, you know, so effort is the effort that we make in any moment to keep the mind bright. Determination is the effort that we make over a period of time, you know, understanding that brightness in the mind will develop over time if we make the effort, and to understand that it's not about the results, right, you know. I mean, people will say this all the time, you know, I reflected, I did this, I didn't feel anything, you know. Well, you have to kind of let go of the need for results, you know. The results will come, you know, in time, you know, they'll come in God's time, as we used to say, right? So if you keep making the effort wholeheartedly, but if you're kind of like making the effort to brighten the mind and you're not seeing quote-unquote results and you're complaining about that, you know, then you're really short-circuiting any possibility that you have to really open the heart. I mean, that kind of makes sense, right? So we just keep making the effort. You know, it's planting seeds, and the seeds will come to fruition when they're ready to come to fruition. So the real thrust of this talk is to be proactive in keeping the mind bright, and to develop the brightness in the mind, to keep making it stronger, keep making it stronger. You know, we might say, well, yeah, my mind is much brighter, you know, than it was 10 years ago. Well, can you make it even stronger? How strong can you get it? I mean, this is the attitude of a Dhamma student. This is the attitude of a Dhamma student, you know. It's like, yeah, I've developed some brightness in the mind, but I want it even brighter. I want the mind even brighter. So we try different things, as Tanisara Bhikkhu says, we play with it so that we can get to higher levels of brightness. How bright can the mind be? Can I develop my skill and develop the brightness in the mind? So this is how a Dhamma student thinks. Not being complacent, but striving for even more profound levels of brightness in the mind. As I've already said, this need to be proactive is so important to understand given the inclination that we may have towards darkness. We may look at the world and see a lot of negativity. And of course, what we're focused on often tends to be the negativity in the world. Or, you know, we turn on the TV or the phone or whatever, and what we hear tends to be negative. The messages that we hear tend to be about how rotten things are. So, you know, this effort that we're making to brighten the mind goes against the stream, you know, it goes against the cultural stream. And it goes, in many cases, against our own personal inclinations towards negativity, towards darkness, towards only looking at the darkness. You know, where we're so inured to looking at the darkness. And then, of course, we have very habitual, unskillful ways of dealing with darkness, right? You know, because you know, the mind can only tolerate, the heart can only tolerate a certain amount of darkness. So, you know, there's some level of understanding that, you know, there needs to be you know, if all there is darkness in the mind, we'll die, you know. I remember Tanisha Biku saying that, I remember once talking to him about, you know, my mind being very dark, and him saying something to me that I've always held dearly. He said, don't let the darkness have all of your mind. Don't let the darkness have all of your mind. We know that we can't let the darkness have all of our mind, but, you know, in our unskillfulness, we may strive to find some light in unskillful ways, right? Because we don't really know how to brighten the mind. I didn't know how to brighten the mind, so I had a lot of darkness in my mind always, but, you know, I used drugs and alcohol to try to find some brightness in the mind. And that kind of worked for a little while, and then, you know, I mean, a very short while, and then I became addicted to those things, and you know, if we're looking for brightness in any kind of sense experience, sense pleasure, you know, it eventually is going to lead to more darkness, because those sense experiences have to be continually replenished. So we have to make this proactive effort on an ongoing basis to keep the mind bright as we go through our days in all of our postures. So invariably, you know, when I give a talk like this, and part of the reason for giving this talk was the excellent questions that came up last week after I gave the talk on developing brightness in the mind in regard to teachers, you know, invariably, when we think about this notion of keeping the mind bright, you know, there'll be in our own minds perhaps an objection that would be expressed along the lines of, well, what about suffering? What about my suffering? You know, all this brightness is great, but don't you understand I'm suffering? And what about all the suffering in the world? You know, what about the darkness in myself, and what about the darkness in the world? As I said last week, you know, in our practice, we learn to make room for both. We learn to make room for both. You know, we acknowledge that there's darkness in the world and in ourselves, and we learn to meet that skillfully, and we learn to look at how we're meeting it unskillfully, really, is our practice. You know, and we learn to let go of what we're doing that's unskillful in terms of the darkness within ourselves, and how to find freedom from it through looking at it very closely. That's the first noble truth, to comprehend dukkha, to comprehend suffering. You know? But we also need to acknowledge the goodness in the world and in ourselves. So we need to do both, and there's room for both. You know, there's room for both. So our practice is one in which we're able to take a step back. We're learning to be able to take a step back. You know, we tend to be so focused in on certain things. We have this tunnel vision, and a lot of it goes to, this is what's wrong, and that's all we can see. Well, yeah, this is wrong, but it's not all my experience. You know, it's not all my experience. And this is very hard for us because, you know, our minds, you know, the human mind tends to really latch on to something. This is why, you know, the human mind, you know, can do great things, but it can also create incredible suffering because of its nature to cling, you know, the way that it clings. So, you know, we grasp on to stuff that's negative, and that's all we can see and all we can focus on. So in our practice, we're learning to be able to take a step back and to be able to see things clearly, to take a wider view of things. I always love that quote of Thoreau that I speak to a little bit in my first book. You know, the universe is wider than our views of it. You know? We tend to have a very narrow view of ourselves and the world. So we're learning in Dhamma practice to be able to take a step back and take a wider view. Now, of course, if we can see the goodness in ourselves and acknowledge it, and take joy in it, and see the goodness in the world and other beings, and in the Dhamma and in life, in the preciousness of life, and acknowledge it and take joy in it, this enables us to develop concentration. Enables us to develop concentration. Joy, appreciation, this quality of brightness is the proximate cause of concentration. Concentration doesn't develop on a high level, in other words, the level of jhana, the Buddha said, unless there's joy in the mind. So if there's this quality of joy in the mind, we're able to develop higher levels of concentration, jhana. We're able to develop ease and pleasure. We're able to develop equanimity, the crowning element of jhana, acceptance and space, and now we're in good position to look at and meet our suffering. So the more we're able to develop this quality of appreciation or joy in a bright mind, the more we're able to look at our suffering. So this is a central premise in the Buddha's teachings. In order to be able to meet suffering, suffering in the world, suffering in other beings, and of course, most importantly and most difficult, the suffering in ourselves, we need to have a bright mind. Joy keeps us in balance, keeps us in balance. Oftentimes people will come to me and they're going through a difficult time, and we meet and we talk. Oftentimes the way some of you have been privy to these kinds of conversations, oftentimes if we're meeting for an hour, it's like 55 minutes we're talking about the ways that you're struggling and how you can deal with the different emotions and different experiences of life that you're struggling with. But I always make sure in that last 5 minutes to talk about keeping the mind bright. Right? Usually I end with that, or oftentimes I do. What are you doing to keep the mind bright? I know you're going through a really difficult time. I know that what you're going through right now is challenging, but are you taking care of yourself in terms of keeping the mind bright? What can you do to keep the mind bright, to keep things in balance? So again, a key premise, the brightness in the mind, the ease and the pleasure, the acceptance that we develop in the practice put us in position to know our suffering, to meet our suffering. Another way that we sometimes think about this is if we feel good, if part of our experience feels good, if part of the body feels good, if part of the mind feels good, then we don't mind so much looking at what's painful. Or another way to think about it is if we feel good about ourselves, we don't mind so much looking at the stuff about ourselves that isn't so good. I mean, if we really don't feel good about ourselves, it's usually too painful for us to look at the things about ourselves that are unskillful or difficult or challenging. Another way that I like to think about it is the brightness in the mind enables us to see clearly into the darkness. So in our practice, we develop these qualities that enable us to look at suffering. Another common objection when we talk about acknowledging our goodness and cultivating joy and appreciation and seeing the blessing of our own goodness and the goodness of others and the goodness in this life and the preciousness of this life. And when we make this plea, when we offer this encouragement to develop a recognition of the goodness in things and the goodness in ourselves, a common objection is, well, this makes us weak and passive. I mean, this is something that people often think at the beginning of their practice, and I know that I did. If I focus on happiness, if I focus on joy, if I don't focus all the time on my suffering, I'll never end my suffering. You're asking me to focus on or acknowledge what's good, and of course we're saying make room for both, but we tend not to think. We tend to think very black and white, so what we may be apt to conjecture is that what the practice is asking us to do is to is to put aside suffering and just cultivate, you know, these qualities of goodness and appreciation. But if we do that, I'll never end my suffering. I'll never change. Or if I focus only on the good, if I focus on the goodness in the world, I'll never accomplish anything. I'll never be able to do anything. For those of us who, you know, want to try to do something about the way the world is, I'll never be able to do anything about the pain in the world if I don't focus on it all the time. Now, this is a very common misconception. But the truth of it is when the mind is bright, we're in the place of greatest strength. You know, the classic response to this objection, that people often offer, you know, it's the classic response that the Thai Ajahns, the Asian teachers would offer is, well, look at the Buddha. You know, the Buddha, his heart was shining, you know, and filled with joy and love and compassion, and look what he accomplished. You know, look what he accomplished. He changed the world. We're still talking about him thousands of years later. Fact of the matter is, you know, the Buddha and his disciples were not a glum lot, you know. They weren't walking around, you know, drearily, you know. Oh, the world, oh, it's so terrible. You know, the food, oh, what the householders are giving, you know, they were happy, they were joyful, they were described as being joyful. They met life joyfully, with a bright heart. Now, we may have a tendency, as we learn certain skills, to use these skills unskillfully. You know, we may have a tendency toward, or we may fall into numbness and passiveness. You know, if we're not skillful, our goodness might turn to weakness. We can apply practice unskillfully. You know, we can take a wrong turn. We can adopt wrong view. You know, that everything has to always be nice and pleasant, and we can use our practice to kind of numb ourselves or isolate ourselves. So you know, this is something that, you know, you have to look at in terms of how you're practicing. You know, I mean, the Buddha and his disciples were joyful, you know, but they were not passive, you know. They were not weak, just the opposite. They weren't soft. They were incredibly strong. They were incredibly strong. So we might, you know, incline or use some of these skills to incline to passivity or turning away from things. So we might mistake weakness for kindness. That's a koan for you. You know, I mean, I sometimes think of Dharma practice. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this next week. I'll just say a few more things and then we'll take a couple of questions. One of the ways that, you know, we can think about our Dharma, I like to think about my Dharma practice, you know, in terms of being strong, is, you know, it's about sticking up for myself. So, you know, but we may feel like we shouldn't do that as Dharma students. You know? So it's something that you might want to reflect on. I'll put some reflections in the notes. You know, are there areas where we're not sticking up for ourselves, where we need to stick up for ourselves? Are we being proactive and strong in asserting ourselves, in seeking out our wish to be happy? You know, our task is to act joyfully with compassion and metta. Sometimes we may think we're acting with metta, but it's not metta. Coming from a place of weakness, but metta is strong. Metta is very, there's nothing stronger than metta, than love. People that really were able to accomplish great things in the world were able to understand that, like the Buddha or Martin Luther King or Gandhi. Yeah. So when we're present in the body, in the heart, You know, we connect to our strength, our greatest strength. So to really be happy, to be happy in this life, to be happy, to really know happiness, we need to be very strong. We need to be very strong in order to be happy. You know, we're developing strength, strength of mind and strength of heart. In order to be happy in this life, we need to be strong. There's much difficulty in life. There's much hardship. We've gone through so much hardship in the last few years. There's the truth of life, which includes sickness, aging, death, and separation. Great challenges in this life. You know, in order to be happy, we need to be strong. We come from the heart. We come from a place of strength. So this is very important to understand. In terms of developing appreciation, we're developing the heart. We're connecting to the heart. We're developing our strength. We're putting ourselves in a position of strength. When we're strong, we're able to fulfill our wish to be happy. You know, this practice of the Dharma is, you know, it's often referred to as a warrior practice. It's not a practice for the faint-hearted. You know, it's a practice in which we have to be strong. To practice the Dharma, to be happy, requires strength. We all have that strength. You know? So it's a strength that we find in the heart. So I'll just leave with this reflection. What would it be like? What would it be like to live from this place of strength? What would it be like to be strong? And again, next week I'll take up this subject, and we can talk more about it, but I'll leave it there for now.